And in the studio right now, we're joined by Sean Parrish. And as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, Sean is the owner and editor of Highway 61 magazine and also Northern Wilds. He's also a regular columnist on WTIP. Great to have you in the studio, Sean.
Yeah, good to be here, Buck. It's been a while since I've been here, actually.
Yeah, it has been a little while since you've been on the Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Of course, you're regularly on your own column here on WTIP.
Yeah, and I just want to make a clarification because that's Outdoor News' column, and I've been writing that for many, many years, and I do it for the local community here on WTIP. But
So it's one that you write for Outdoor News,
right,
and you read over our airways.
Yeah.
Well, it works regardless.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
I get some good feedback on it.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Did you happen to listen to last night's program? Did you get a chance?
Yeah, I was just talking to Dave there during the break, and I caught part of it on my way home last night, and then I caught the rest online today. So I thought Jay did a really good job of getting to some of the issues.
Mm-hmm. And for those folks of you out there who don't know exactly what we're talking about, each month we have a program called First Thursday Conversations, and last night's topic was moose, and we had three representatives of different facets of the moose story on, as well as listeners, call-in listeners on that program, talking about the problems we're seeing with the moose population. And Sean, I know that you've been involved in that question for some time.
Yeah, I think actually I was thinking about it, but I think the last time I was on the Roadhouse was right after we finished up with the Moose Advisory Committee in 2009, where we was a committee. Myself and Bob Baker from Gunflint Pines Resort were, I think, the two Cook County members on it, and we were probably the only ones that were laypersons. And anyways, our committee came up with a series of recommendations for the DNR to create a moose management plan. And at the time, we were led to believe that the moose management plan would be completed by January of 2010. It was not completed until August of 2011, and it's actually still in a draft form. It's still not complete. During that time period, the moose population has dropped by, I don't know, better than 20%.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's something that another part of the state has experienced long before we did, being in the northwest part of the state. Is there a correlation there that you can talk about?
I don't know if there is a correlation there or not. The northwest is so different than the northeast. There's no boreal forest there. It's basically aspen parkland and grain agriculture, small grain agriculture. The moose population did drop rapidly there. It dropped rapidly in the corresponding area of Manitoba and also northeastern North Dakota. So actually at the beginning of our advisory committee, one of the first things the DNR did was hold a moose summit where we all met in Duluth, and we received information about the latest and greatest in moose research pretty much from across the continent, at least as it was relevant to what was occurring in Minnesota. And one thing that really stuck out with me was when we talked about the Northwest herd, we had North Dakota there and a representative of Manitoba. The representative of Manitoba said, well, I think a lot of what happened in Manitoba is we had unrestricted native hunting occurring there, and it was very close to the population center in Winnipeg, so the moose were hit pretty hard by hunting harvest. Then the North Dakota guy came on and said, we're not sure of this, but we think we may have thought we could harvest more moose than we could in that portion of North Dakota. And, you know, whether or not that was totally the reason why the moose collapsed and haven't recovered, I don't think anyone can say. But both of those places were pretty concerned about the hunting harvest. Just prior to the collapse, I was able to tease out later through our committee, and it wasn't easy to get this information from the DNR, but they were issuing up to 650 permits per year in the Northwest prior to the population collapse. And, you know, that is a very different part of the state, and it's a very agriculture-driven part of the state, and agriculture is probably the strongest political force in our state. And they didn't like moose, and they didn't like crop damage that was occurring because moose were walking around in their fields. So there was, you know, some pretty serious moose reduction going on prior to the collapse.
Now, we, since we're talking about moose harvest, and that, of course, is what people shoot, is what we're talking about
right there,
the hunting season.
Yeah.
We had a hunting season in this area this year, even though we are talking
still
about
going
the
on.
Collapse
yep.
of the moose here.
Yeah. It's really interesting, though. Just prior to coming in here, Dave Engebretson, our local wildlife manager, stopped by the office, and he had just talked to a party that was coming back from the Ham Lake, Cavity Lake fire area, and had shot a bull moose. And prior to shooting their moose, they had seen 17 moose up in the burns.
Wow.
And I think he was a little surprised to hear somebody say that. So, and I asked him, apparently nobody's done any real research or really looked yet. There's some projects being proposed to see what's gone on in the fire area, if that's been, you know, if it's been conducive to moose.
We have been talking to different scientists about their expectations in the Pagami Creek area, and they're predicting that it'll be good moose habitat there. Dave.
It's very interesting that you mentioned that they saw so many moose, because my understanding is that there were a lot of moose hunters who drew permits for the southern area of the Boundary Waters, and they were allowed to turn them in for another time because they were afraid that they either A, wouldn't have access, or B, wouldn't see any moose because of the fire.
Well, that would be, during a fire. But, after the fire occurs, that's pretty much, moose are really as much an open country animal as they are a forest animal, and they really need that habitat disturbance to occur. I think he said 11 parties decided to turn back their licenses out of that Pagami Creek area. But were I one of them, I think I would have done the same, because there was no guarantee you'd even be able to, that the Forest Service would even let you in there to hunt. So I think that was what drove that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I know from my store, where we are the big game registration center for both, you know, the state hunt, and also for the 1854 management hunt, that we hadn't registered a single moose yet for the 18. We did register one so far for, and they actually started hunting a week before the state hunt started.
I think 1854 starts the same time as the state hunt, and Fond du Lac starts a week earlier.
Yeah, they came. It was the Fond du Lac people, who were up here hunting, because there was a lot of red up and down the Arrowhead.
Yeah, I was actually surprised at how many hunters were out prior to the opening of the moose hunt. And it's pretty obvious who the moose hunters are compared to the grouse hunters.
Mm-hmm.
They're carrying rifles, number one.
Yeah. That's a good sign, indication, I guess. Yeah. Well, there's a... I know that hunter predation has to have some effect, but there's a lot of other factors involved here. Which other factors have really struck your mind as being legitimate concerns to be talking about?
Well, I think everything that they discussed last night is legitimate.
I wasn't able to listen last night. I had other engagements, though, and a lot of the folks out there wouldn't either.
Yeah, so... disease is certainly a big one, and they're finding through the research they've been doing, I think they said that the radio collar stuff started around 2002, so there's a pretty good history there, and what they're finding is pretty high mortality rates due to illness, some of which they can tease out, some of which they can't, but what they're finding is moose, like at this time of year, that are starving to death when there's, they're surrounded by food. There's problems with brainworm, which is a disease that is fatal to moose and caribou, and I think I've seen some stuff that had a lot to do with why there's no caribou left here and probably never will be, is due to the brainworm. But that is not fatal to white-tailed deer. And the old-time biologists would tell you, anytime you start seeing deer numbers rise in moose country, You know, they don't have to be completely segregated, but when deer numbers start to go up, you're going to see more issues with moose survival and moose mortality. Guys now are saying that maybe isn't the case, but I don't know. I would say as a layperson, the jury's still out on that. I guess I'd put some faith in what the old-timers told me.
You made a good point in your Outdoor News column this last time about moose, correlating the deer populations rise and the moose populations fall, as far as well as the opposite that happened prior to, prior to the late 90s, you know, 2000 era.
Yeah, I guess, and I only went back as far as 1971, which is when the modern moose hunt started in Minnesota. And I think prior to that, and I'm going strictly by memory here, but I'm sure I'm close, I think the season closed in like 1922.
Something like that.
A long time
ago. It was in the 20s.
Yeah. Well, anyways, when the moose season opened in 1971, and I'm not sure it opened in the Northwest at that time or just the Northeast, but it for sure did in the Northeast. At that time, that same year, Minnesota did not have a deer season because the deer population, there had been a couple of bad winters in the late 60s, and the northern deer population, which was basically the only deer population at that time, had crashed. There really weren't deer in the farm country in any appreciable numbers at that time. So you had a period of time there, basically through the 70s, where DNR in the early 70s kind of experimented with deer seasons. They used to have a straight 9-day, it's brown or down deer season, which, again, old-timers like my father would tell you was the best thing, but and he didn't really care if deer numbers were up or down, and understood the fact that those cycles occur. But then they went to bucks-only hunting, and throughout the 70s and into the 80s, there were not a lot of doe permits available. Primarily, it was a 16-day buck season, and you were darn lucky to shoot a buck pretty much anywhere in northeastern Minnesota at that time. And then as the deer population started to recover, started seeing some more cutting going on in the 80s and whatnot, some more habitat being created, then there started to be a few more deer, and they started issuing more antlerless doe permits. I moved up here and started deer hunting. I think the first year I deer hunted in Cook County was 1988, and I'm pretty much dead certain that was the first year that there were doe permits available in Cook County. So between 1971 and 1988, there were so few deer in Cook County that, you know, it was a bucks only hunt. Hunters, I can remember talking to hunters, Bill Galley, Dr. Bill Galley, who you would remember. I remember him telling me, you know, I hunt up here the opening weekend when you've got a chance to shoot a deer, and then we head someplace else because there's just not that many deer in Cook County. And that would have been around that time frame. Pretty much the herd stayed down. You know, it started to pop up a little bit there during the 90s, but we had the Halloween blizzard in, I believe, 91. Then we had the mother of all winters twice in a row in 95, 96, 96, 97. That really hammered the deer herd again. And another thing occurred at that time is in 95, 96, feeding deer became a big issue. And I remember talking to people who... One guy who really surprised me is feeding deer, and he said, look, I've got a choice of feeding them or watching them starve to death outside my kitchen window. And he decided he'd rather feed them than watch them starve. But I think a lot of people took up feeding deer, not that it hadn't occurred prior to that, but a lot more people started feeding deer then, and the population recovered pretty quickly after those bad snows. You know, there was a few bucks only years there in the late 90s. And then by the mid 2000s, I mean, we had a couple of years there where there were, you know, 5 deer limits where you could shoot a buck and 4 does.
We'd never seen that before.
Never had seen that before. Yeah. And now, and in part, I think it's due to trying to keep the deer herd down for moose, but we have basically a 2 deer limit. You can shoot 2 does or a buck and a doe. So that's been a big change. I mean, there's to me, that's probably the largest change that's occurred on the landscape in my lifetime, the northeastern Minnesota landscape. And I've hunted in northeastern Minnesota and in moose country pretty much since 1972. So,
and deer, even, you know, they're so cute to look at. Of course, they're very people friendly kind of an animal out there, but they also do some other damages to like the cedar that are trying to grow up and the white pines that are trying to grow up and other things in our in our area. Yeah. I read that one of the management thoughts the DNR had was to ban feeding deer.
Yeah, and probably at great risk to myself here, I definitely was the person that introduced that on the advisory committee.
Okay, sure.
I'll maybe take credit for that.
Maybe not for the same reasons, totally.
Well, I just think that I just don't think it's necessarily, and I have fed deer. I fed deer for several years and just decided it was a bad idea. I just came to that on my own. But I just really don't think that you can address anything up here that's related to wolves or deer or moose unless you get that separation between we, the people, and the animals that live around us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're feeding deer, you're creating wolf food. And don't come complaining to me in February that you got wolves around the house, because they're there because you put the food out.
And we've discussed this on air before, and you know, I've flown in with my two cents worth too, because I also used to feed them, and I quit for the same idea. I saw that doing more damage than good. Mm-hmm. And when you congregate that many deer, as you do, when you feed them in one small area in the winter, and then suddenly the snow starts to melt, all those deer in that little area can't find enough to eat, other than the corn you're putting out there.
Or your shrubs or your neighbor's shrubs or whatever sprouting in the garden.
There won't be anything sprouting in the garden in April, you know, in late March and April when that problem comes. And a lot of deer starve because you put them in that situation. They're too close together.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Plus, of course, you mentioned the wolf. They're just a wolf feed then because there's too many of them right there.
That's where literally, that's where they all are up here, because all the deer migrate down to the shore. And if you're congregating by having them feed, I mean, that's where the wolves are going to come. That's where their food is, too. So, you know.
And we haven't had, to my knowledge, we haven't had, you know, the disease problem they've had in other areas, like in Wisconsin, a deer disease problem. Was it CWF? Is that what it's
called? CWD, chronic wasting disease, which is basically mad cow disease.
But that is
one. But doesn't transmit to humans as far as they know.
Right. But feeding deer.
You can eat the CWD infected deer to find out. I'm not going to try.
Okay, well. So, let's hope we don't have to. Huh? So that thought is out there as well.
Yeah. And then I think that just kind of leads us to the other one, which is predation and the wolf issue. And. You know, we don't have any management control over wolves in Minnesota because they're listed on the endangered species list, and it's getting more and more to be kind of a theater of the absurd there, because our wolf population is more than recovered. I mean, we've pretty much got wolves in all the habitat that'll support wolves in the state, and also in Wisconsin and Michigan. The western states are already holding hunting seasons on wolves. They've only had wolves for about 10 years in the west. And as someone I know pointed out to some friends in the Rockies, there's probably more wolves here on the North Shore than there is in the entire Northern Rockies. So, nobody's really sure what that wolf predation is doing to the moose, and particularly to moose calves. So there's some concern about that as well. Mm-hmm. Possibly bear predation. They talked a little bit about that last night. And again, pretty much on newborn calves. And nobody's got a good handle on that, but there's research elsewhere that has shown that, in the Rockies, for instance, in Montana, they were able to show that, wolf were reducing elk populations, primarily through predation on elk calves. And it's very similar in the numbers anyways, where, you know, we've got lots of elk and not a lot of calves coming up, which is kind of what we have right now with moose, where we've got adult moose and not very many calves being produced.
As I listened to this, and you listened last night, which I'll listen to later, some of the comments from last night, it seems like it might be more a case of like a perfect storm for moose population to fall right now.
Probably.
A lot of those reasons seem to have merit.
Yeah.
And yet maybe you can't pick out one single one.
Yeah, I guess that's, and I think that's where the researchers are at too, is there's any number of possibilities out there, all of which are probably contributing something. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
And Dave and I talked earlier in the program a little bit about what's happening with, I mean, it's crazy weather. The critters that weren't here 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and especially insect critters, they could also be a big part of what's happening, especially for the moose, with ticks being a larger part of our environment now.
Yeah, yeah, and you can, when you talk about critters, I mean, we've got things like, we've got gray fox on the North Shore now, and, you know, in the 1970s, those would have been in extreme southeastern Minnesota. That'd be the only place you would have found them in the state, you know. Yeah. Now they're throughout the state. Yeah. So, yeah, creatures have moved north, and certainly, you know, our climate has gotten warmer. However, I think there are some within DNR that would like to just say, well, it's climate change, and we don't have a chance. Anyone who lives here knows that we still get winter in the Moose Range, and it's far more, it's longer. We get much deeper snow. It's colder than anywhere else in the state. And I don't think it's quite hit the point where moose can't live here.
isn't the moose problem throughout the state? We can't point to another part of the state and say their moose population is thriving.
Point to other parts of the country that are warmer than here where the moose population is thriving.
But not in our state.
No, but no. I'm saying that that where we have moose in Minnesota, we also have the deepest snow and longest winters.
Yeah.
And, you know, moose are still expanding in places like Massachusetts.
Do they still have a tick problem there?
Not sure. I would think so, because that's where Lyme disease originated, was Connecticut. True. So yeah. I would think so.
I know one of the New England states, we had a guest from there this summer, I believe it was New Hampshire, they actually have so many moose that they really don't drive the country roads at night anymore, kind of the way it was here for a few years.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, you would see 8, 10, 12 moose on the Gunflint Trail in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. whereas now you don't see as many. My point is that, yes, there are other places that have lots of other reasons why moose wouldn't want to be there, and yet there are moose.
Right. Right.
So that doesn't mean that it's not correct. It just means that we don't know why, far as that being a problem.
Right. And the extent of the problem, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not here.
Because they have winters in New Hampshire, too.
Right.
Right.
And
right.
Vermont.
Yeah. But their moose populations in New England are still growing. And I think their hunting harvest is, you know, if you added all the New England states together, it's many thousands of moose. More than we've ever harvested here.
So, really?
Yeah. 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 And then, you know, they're found fairly far south into the Rockies. And I was just...
And they used to trickle down to Iowa sometimes.
Yeah.
In years past.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Not that they lived there.
Yeah.
One or two would kind of wander.
A little lost, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Michigan authorized its first moose hunt on the Upper Peninsula this year. So, they don't have as big a herd as we do, but obviously mm-hmm. they feel their herd's healthy enough. They can authorize a hunt. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they held the hunt. I'm not sure on that, but it's possible to do now.
Well, it's a topic that many people are interested in this state.
Yeah.
And judging from what I heard about our call-ins last night in Cook County, it's mindful. They're kind of an iconic animal here in this part of the state, and people love them, and people are worried about them.
Yeah, I think I don't think that the biologists last night that were defending hunting right now won over a lot of hearts and minds in Cook County last night.
You don't necessarily want to shoot them to study them. I know that.
Well, and just the idea that, you know, we've got to kill them to save them, I just don't think is washing with people anymore. Mm-hmm. And you know, at some point, both the state and the tribes are going to have to really address that. Mm-hmm. And I think this is no small issue, but the 1854 treaty has never been tested in court. If the state stops hunting moose and even one of the three bands decides to continue hunting, someone may take that to court. I don't mm-hmm. know who. And I'm not drawing any conclusions. I'm just saying that this is a reality. So.
Yep.
That's probably some of the reason we're still seeing a hunt.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking with Sean Parrish, and I think we'll probably end it there. We're kind of running out of time, Sean, sure. But it sure was great to have you aboard here tonight, and always fun to have you on the Roadhouse. We hope you'll join us again soon.